This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Here's a question for you. What makes a nation? Is it really just an idea? The idea being that we're all going to share in this group identity. For example, we all have decided that we're going to be Americans, work for the greater good of America and for our fellow Americans, the same as if you are European. Pulling together the EU, the European Union, was an idea that came after World War II, and decades later, the framework came to be, and the continental concept of being a European as a nationality took hold, and the EU common market became it. Except that it was still just an idea, and ideas can be shaken. They can be disrupted. There can be static in the idea. They can come under attack, influence, and maybe that's what's happened with the recent vote for Brexit, the British vote to leave the EU. Here is FBI Director James Comey answering a question by Representative Adam Schiff, a Democrat, at the recent hearing on President Trump's connection with Russia.
Would they have a preference for a candidate who expressed open admiration for Putin?
And I hope you'll reformulate the question. Mr. Putin would like people who like him.
Would they have a preference for a candidate who encouraged Brexit and other departures from Europe? Would they like to see more Brexits?
Yes.
We're now joined by the Right Honorable Henry McLeish, the former First Minister of Scotland. He's a visiting professor at St. Mary's University, and our phone lines are open if you've got a question for or comment for, about this. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. And First Minister McLeish, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much.
I'm delighted to be here. It's a great city.
So first off, let's talk about the news that's happening right now. We know now that there is one person dead at the attack that happened at Parliament this morning. You don't know the details, and I can't ask you about that. But just, you know, that's a place, that's your old stomping grounds. What's your impression?
Well, I'm shocked, greatly saddened, and obviously we're concerned about the person who has been killed. But I spent 14 years of my life there, so I've walked the bridge. I know the area well. I know the compound they've got into. But, you know, it's illustrative of a very troubled world that we live in. It can happen in the US, it's been happening in Europe, and of course now in Britain, and the last time was in 2007. So nevertheless, we've got to look at these issues. It calls for solidarity in the world, and the main thing is that hopefully the police will be on top of this and the security services, and let's hope that at the end of the day, this is another measure of how we need to work together to make life more safe, more peaceful, and give that solidarity that we're all seeking.
So to the idea that we're going to explore during this half hour, talking about identity and nationalism and the Brexit and maybe even a Scottish exit as well from the UK as a result of that, and some of the issues that are happening here in the United States with the Russian interference with our recent presidential election. What do you make about all that?
Well, you know, there are really serious issues at work here, because I was astonished to hear Mr. Comey talk about the fact that Vladimir Putin hated Hillary Clinton, and by definition then was going to try and undermine her campaign to boost his campaign. But I think the other point is that we've got the connections about possible collusion between a campaign and the Russians. Now, this is unheard of. I mean, we know the Russians, you know, it's a dictatorship. Vladimir Putin is responsible to himself. This goes on all the time. But this is the most important, the biggest event that I've seen where the democracy, where the goodwill of a nation, trust has been completely destroyed by an outside intervention. But I think then, though, for Europe, what is important for us is that all of this reveals mixed messages from the US about Putin, about Europe, and about NATO. And it's interesting to note that what happens in America is not just for America. We're very much dependent on the president and his attitudes, and these are some of the issues that concern us at the present time.
In Europe, the head of the German government, Angela Merkel, is considered to be the leader of the free world now. We saw a meeting between President Trump and Angela Merkel not go well, was not warmly received. What kind of message does that send to Europe?
Well, it sends a poor message because, you know, in the last 60 days, we've seen a slew of insults possibly being given out, whether it be the Mexican president, whether it be in terms of Australia. But look, Angela Merkel is a tremendous leader. She's got great qualities, and quite frankly, she's the leader of the free world.
She's a proven leader.
She's a proven leader, and she's very calm. She's very measured. And to be honest, as someone from Europe watching her in the White House, I was slightly embarrassed because I'm a great lover of America, but this was not the kind of performance that sends any degree of confidence to Europe at a time, as we've talked about earlier with the incident in London, where we need calm heads, we need reassurance, and we need to make sure we keep the trust as high as it can be between different countries.
So I wanted to the nut concept that I want to drive home is really the fragile nature of the idea of a nation and how it really... Part of being a citizen of the United States, whatever, is you had this idea that we're an indivisible nation, and that we will. But that's not so much that this idea can come under attack. You know, especially now in the information age, and we're seeing how information can be weaponized and used against a people, with the way people consume information online, so much of it being able to isolate and find only what and be in silos. And so is that what you're seeing?
Yes, I mean, the important thing is it's not just happening in America. It's happening throughout Western Europe. You know, there is right-wing populism is spreading through Europe at the present time. The Dutch result last week showed that we had checked Wilders, who's one of the most extreme fanatics that we have. No, but that said about the question of identity. Identity is we've got multiple identities. You're a member of a family, you're a member of a community, you might be a member of a golf club, you might be a city function. So we have multiple identities. But in recent times, the whole question of national identity has emerged. Now, to keep it very simple, way back in 1648, the whole idea of a nation state started to emerge. And since then, we've seen that develop. But now, in America, in Germany, France, Holland, and in Britain, there's a nationalism creeping into this identity issue. And for me, I'd like for your listeners to maybe think about the idea that I conceive of myself as not a nationalist, but a patriot of Scotland and of Britain. And the danger is that people, and the main are patriots, they love America, they love Britain, they love Scotland. But the danger that we're seeing politically worldwide is this issue of nationalism. And that carries with it a lot of negative overtones that we in Europe have seen before 45, and what we're worried about is this kind of coalescing around nationality's fine, identity's fine, but if it slips over then to nationalism, which is, you know, love of one country at the expense of another, to put it simply, America first means other countries might come second. That's not the kind of identity politics we want, but I'm afraid this is what's happening in Europe as well.
So we're seeing nationalism, which is a toxic form of patriotism, ethno-nationalism, where you're trying to exclude people based upon your ethnicity. Also, jingoism, which is a brutal, aggressive form of this as well. It just seems to be rising, and this is being fed by someone. Someone's benefiting from this. They're feeding the frenzy, and they say that Russia has a stake in destabilizing the West economically, politically, diplomatically, in order for the benefit of the Russian state. We're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, the Right Honorable Henry McLeish, the former First Minister of Scotland, now a visiting professor at St. Mary's University. We're talking about the information war that's happening these days on your Facebook page and across the United States, fake news being poured in. Where is this coming from? What's driving this? How is this going to impact you and our national security? Also, this is part of the national dialogue now as we talk about the alleged involvement of the Trump administration with the Russians. You know, this is under investigation, and there has been no solid links as of yet between links of collusion between the Trump campaign and Vladimir Putin. And but so that's established, but that's all part of the whole thing. And so First Minister McLeish, talk about what that means, being First Minister of Scotland.
Well, in the United Kingdom since 1999, we've had devolved government. And it's not dissimilar to the US with the federal government and the states. So it means that we had a lot of power devolved to Scotland. We created a parliament, which is the first parliament since 1707, since we joined the United Kingdom. So in that age, Northern Ireland had an assembly, Wales had an assembly, and Scotland had its parliament. So being First Minister is really, I suppose, being Prime Minister of Scotland. But of course, devolution means that we have a number of powers, but we don't have all the powers. And of course, this is one of the big issues in Scotland at the present time about, do we need to go further as a nation within the United Kingdom?
So it used to be that Scotland would send ministers to Parliament in London, and then there was an agreement that Scotland would have more autonomy and they established its own parliament. And so and you were one of the ministers from Scotland that was in London, and then you had resigned as part of that, and you ran and became the first minister of Scotland, which was basically the head of state.
Indeed. And put simply, I helped put the bill through the House of Commons in 1997-98. So in 1999, we then had a new parliament in Scotland. And of course, I was a minister in the UK government, and I left along with other colleagues, and we started to form the new parliament, which has been a huge success. And we now have a situation that's 20 years this year since that famous white paper, which was put to a referendum of all Scots, who agreed not only to have a parliament, but a parliament with tax-raising power. So significant achievement in the last century, and is now doing well in this century.
And so you have a bit of influence in Scotland. What do you think, if the UK moves forward with its hard Brexit, what will Scotland do?
Well, you know, I have a very sharp view about all of this. I mean, I think Brexit is an act of self-harm. It is unnecessary. You know, the European Union, in my judgment, has been a huge success. It celebrates its 60th birthday next week. So at a time when we need to stick together for solidarity, for social cohesion, for prosperity, stability, Britain wants to go it alone. So on that basis, that is bad enough. But there are other consequences that might flow from this, and one of them is Scotland, because 2 years ago, we had a vote in Scotland to see whether we would stay in the United Kingdom or leave. We voted 55% to 45% to stay at that point. But of course, the idea now of coming out of Europe means that it's a game changer. So I suspect that historically, as we talk, there is a vote taking place in the Scottish Parliament right now, which will create the opportunity for a second independence referendum within the next 2 years. So a historic moment in that sense. The second referendum is about to be agreed by the Scottish Parliament, and then they've got to go to London and seek agreement for that.
If Scotland does break away from the United Kingdom, will it continue as part of the EU?
Well, it can't at the present time, because basically the United Kingdom is the member of the European Union, 28 members. If the United Kingdom leaves after this two-year period, then Scotland will have left alongside Britain. But the idea of the Scottish National Party is that once leaving the United Kingdom, they would want to apply to become members of the European Union. Again, a process that might take 2 or 3 years.
Okay, let's get a caller in on the conversation, and our phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, and Steve has called in. And Steve, you're on the air with the Right Honourable Henry McLeish, the former First Minister of Scotland. Go ahead. Okay, we're not hearing that. And according to my notes from the producers, that Steve was saying that we were using unfair or biased language about the situation, that people in Europe are scared. Okay, we got Steve now. So, Steve, are you there?
Here I am. Sorry that my ear takes the mute button on my iPhone. They tend to show I'm a little bit more conservative maybe than your average caller. I'm kind of a libertarian type. You know, I try to be objective about both parties and attitudes and sides. And one of the things that kind of disturbed me about the conversation I was hearing on the show earlier was some of the language I think is really pejorative. When you're talking about some of these groups, and some of these people in Europe, look, they've had a lot of attacks lately. They're scared. They're worried about this. I don't think it's fair necessarily to blame all this on jingoism, necessarily. You know, I have to really Why? Because this is a new thing. This hasn't been happening for very long.
Okay, Steve. Steve, I think we got your point. Okay. Well, this is the end. You know, it was 1 year ago that we had the attacks in Brussels. Mm-hmm. There are attacks happening in Europe, but I remember when the IRA was bombing Britain quite a bit, and then we had the Red Brigade in Italy. There was all sorts of stuff happening. This is actually not that new for Europe, really.
No, but I mean, you've had your, I mean, you know, this is a worldwide phenomenon, and it's also happened in the United States. But Steve's right to make the point that it's happening in Europe. But look, you know, 30, 40 years ago, we did have the Irish problem. That has now fixed itself. We move forward. Now, you can't decry the fact that we live in a very troubled world. And sadly, these attacks were going to continue. That's why nations like the US, like Britain, like France are taking measures to try and tackle terrorism. But if you have a lone gunman or a lone knifeman, you know, you can cope with a lot, you can cater for a lot, but you're going to have these outbursts. It doesn't mean that they're not important, but at the end of the day, in your country and in my country, we're doing what we can. And we've also got to remember that in terms of individual freedom, you know, we don't want police states. So therefore, it's a tough, tough argument. On the other hand, I think that we'll see these incidents. But look, let's also look at the source of the problems. You know, we can tackle incidents, but let's look at North Africa. Let's look at the Middle East. Let's look at the failure to resolve anything about the Palestine-Israeli issue. So in a global world, nations just can't sit back and think, well, somebody else will sort the problems out. We only live in one world, and it's high time we had a look at the world in that on that particular basis, because these problems can only be solved by countries coming together. And that's why I'm slightly anxious about the kind of nationalism in the US, which is too much putting America first, make America great. America's got to engage. That's why the world will remain a peaceful place.
How would Scotland have an arrangement or would be part of NATO? How would that work?
Well, if indeed Scots decide that they want to leave the United Kingdom in a referendum, Scots would then want to join the EU. They'd then become members of NATO, as Ireland and other small countries have. So in that sense, it would be a complete change because we wouldn't be part of the UK. But for all intents and purposes, Scotland would carry on as a very prosperous, progressive nation as we are today.
Let's go to the caller. Tom is on the line. Tom, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I just had one question. I understand many people in Scotland would like to stay in the EU, but is there much sentiment for leaving the EU?
Okay, Tom, thank you for the call. Yeah.
Tom, the situation is very complex in the United Kingdom because Scotland, along with Northern Ireland and the whole of London, which is 13 million people, voted to remain within the European Union. So one of the arguments has been put forward that the large number of people who wanted to leave in the main came from England. So this is heightened the political tensions within the UK because Northern Ireland and Scotland are saying, well, look, we didn't vote for this, but we're being dragged out of it. And of course, when you take a large metropolitan area like London, who voted 80 to 20% to stay, then this is going to have political repercussions. I don't think there's any prospect now that Brexit can be avoided. But of course, the Prime Minister of Britain, she seems to be going for a hard Brexit. And this will mean not only being out of the EU, it'll be out of the single market, it'll be out of the customs union, and we'll be left to go around countries and try and negotiate our own trade deals, which, in my personal view, is not in the long-term interest of Britain.
So the U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says he's going to skip a NATO meeting with all the other secretaries of states, and he's going to go to Russia instead. This kind of message does that send?
Well, it sends a confused message because, look, nobody in the U.S. or in Europe thinks that Vladimir Putin, you know, is a benevolent friend who's just misunderstood. That's the wholly wrong complex to put on it. I thought Tillerson would be better advised to be going to NATO because we need reassurance. We need messages of support. We need to reinforce the trust. And that can be done from the White House. But this is why the Russian involvement in the US elections is so vital, because what is the president's view about Putin? What is his views about the EU? What about the views about NATO, which he described as obsolete? And all he wants to keep saying is we need to pay more in to be part of the NATO club. So we are nervous in Europe. And I think the president could allay those fears. And if Tillerson was going to Brussels instead of Moscow, then that would be a big help.
You've described yourself as a Scot, as a Brit, and as a European, and also you say you're a patriot of humanity. Yeah. What does that mean?
Well, look, it sounds a fancy, polluting term, but I was impressed by the fact that Victor Hugo, who wrote Les Miserables, Hunchback of Notre Dame, philosopher, producer, he was concerned in the 19th century in France with Napoleon that they were becoming very nationalistic. And he came up with this idea and said, look, we love our countries, we're patriots of France, but wouldn't it be a good idea if we could become patriots of humanity? We care for our own country, we love our country, but we don't think our country is superior to any other country, and let's work to resolve some of these issues that we've talked about this morning. It's a huge concept for young people because, you know, the one world idea will keep us together. But if we decide that we want to trade bilaterally, we want to frown upon what other countries do, we want to build walls, we want to do things that have no basis really in fact in helping the world, that's where the idea of patriotism on a human global scale becomes a rallying call, especially for young people who want a better world.
That sounds a little pie in the sky, a little hippy-jippy.
Well, you know, maybe there's nothing wrong with that, but at the end of the day, and before 1945, the question of economic nationalism, xenophobia, nativism, racism, religious intolerance, it was called Nazism at that time. Now, we're not going to go back to those days, but the opted-out group there were the Jews and the Gypsies. You know, nationalism is not a word that we want to either operate within or use. And that's why patriotism is a better phrase, because it creates a love of country. But if you love America, you can love the world. I could love Scotland, but I also want to see a bigger philosophical look at where we are. I think that's exciting. And speaking to a lot of young students in San Antonio and also being in some of the schools, this is an idea they like. They're much more, you know, forward-looking than somebody like me who's lived for nearly 1,000 years, I think, at times when I look at myself. But this is an idea for the future.
What do you think it's like to be in the Baltic states these days, looking at what's going on with NATO maybe falling apart?
Well, you know, the wall fell in 1989, the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, and a lot of the countries wanted to flee from the ravages of the Soviet Union and the Russian Federation. So Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, small countries right on the doorstep of Russia, they're afraid just now. They're concerned. And that's why I come back to this point that America has such military strength, it's the most powerful economy in the world, and it has the ability to reassure. And of course, if President Trump is true to his NATO commitments, then that means if anything happens to Estonia or Latvia or Lithuania, then all the rest of the countries will determine that's an attack on them. So they are afraid, and that's why we've been putting more troops into those areas. There's more flights being taken. And, you know, it's always think in America, you're 5,000 miles away in Texas from some of these issues. We're on the doorstep of trouble. And if you're an Estonian today, you're looking over a border which is very close with all the threats that that potentially holds. And that's why the president must stop pretending that Vladimir is just another man on the street that you want to have a drink with. He's not. He's potentially a menace on the border of Europe. And we need to do something about that in terms of solidarity from the U.S.
And he's actively engaged in trying to destabilize NATO because it's to his benefit and to the benefit of Russia. I want to thank you so much. It was great speaking with you. The Right Honorable Henry McLeish, the former First Minister of Scotland, a visiting professor at St. Mary's University. The source continues. After this break, we talk about walkable San Antonio. Stay tuned.